Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
All right, parents, this is Tim Wright along with Dr. Michael Graham. We're glad to have you with us today. And if you have ever been frustrated with how long the school day is for your kids, or you've had some issues with your kids riding the bus to and from school, and or you've wondered what the heck's going on with all that homework, Dr. Michael Green is going to solve every single question or issue that you have today when it comes to that. This would be a good one, by the way, just to take some notes in terms of your educator friends and teacher friends who probably are asking the exact same questions, right? And so we're going to deal with that today. I want to start with a little Gurion Gold. This is from What Could He Be Thinking? We did this one not too long ago. Another piece of Gurion Gold from this book. Men tend to relate to others with greater degrees of personal independence than women do. Men tend to expect more independent behavior from children than women do. Explain yourself, Dr. Gurion.
A gross generalization. Now, by the way, there was a context for all that.
Yes, there was.
And so what it's really about is the women tend to give up, girls and women tend to give up themselves for others. Mm-hmm. And in other conversations, we've talked about oxytocin, we've talked about the insula and how the mirror neurons work in females. And there's all these biological reasons that women tend to do this. And then there's, you could certainly say they're sociological. So women just sort of give up the self and lose their independence. And they are immersed in the other, right? And males do that less. And again, our insula doesn't work the same way. We don't have as much oxytocin there. We have more testosterone, which is much more of an independence chemical. And so this is a biological tendency that doesn't work in every case, but it's a biological tendency. And so because males, you know, tend to be more independent, they tend to expect more independence. And again, that one is not 100% because there are a lot of dads out there who have just dote on their kids and never help them to become independent. So it's absolutely that happens. But when we're averaging, you know, we tend to find that guys are more, oh, you know, you're okay. Get up, go do that. You know, that's just more independence, less I got to take care of you. And for moms and women, there's more I want to take care of you. And both, I, as you know, argue that both approaches are great and we need both approaches.
Yep. Good. Excellent. Thank you. So today, before we dive into our topic for today, we want to give a shout out to our two sponsors, Man Cave. Men all need to be caring, actively engaged, vested, and encouraged. And they want to take a leadership role in encouraging positive relationships of fathers and male role models with their children. And they promote the importance of nurturing fathers and mothers, parenting, and healthy marriages. And they do that to improve the lives of children and families. That's Man Cave. You can learn more about them on wonderofparenting.com. And you can also learn more about Dr. Greg Jansen, the great work they're doing up in Seattle at the Center of Place of Hope and a top 10 facility for depression treatment. And we've been talking about depression for several podcasts. It just keeps coming up. They're a great resource for you. Wonderofparenting.com. That's wonderofparenting.com. Now, one of the resources that we do have for you, in addition to all of these, is our Facebook page. And if you go to one, you just do a little quick search, Wonder Parenting, and Facebook, hit the join button. You will join with over 1,000 other like-minded parents, and you can post your questions there, get lots of response from parents. And this is one of the questions that got some, that had some energy around it. And so I'm going to read the question, and then a little bit later, I will bring up one of the responses that I thought was really good. So this is basically the question. I feel like the school day is just too long, especially when you factor in the bus ride. My girls leave at 7:30 on the bus. They return at 4:15. Doesn't seem too bad, but they are always so tired. The bus ride is 1 hour and 15 minutes, even though the school is 3 miles away. Wow. Jeez. That's traffic. For whatever reason, my girls want to ride the bus, even though it clearly tires them out. How do I counter these long school days and get some joy and energy into these kids? So, Michael, there's a lot of different places that my brain takes me on this. I don't have kids in school, but I've got grandkids in school. Let's just talk, first of all, from a brain perspective and your experience working with school districts and teachers all these years. Is there kind of a Gurian magic number for how many hours a kid should be in school for a day?
Well, I think 6 hours is better than this. You know, kind of a it's 8:30 or 9 to 2:30 or 3. Mm-hmm. So 5.5 to 6 hours. There's a lunch break in there. There's 2 recesses, and there's gym. And so in that 6 hours, 5 hours and 45 minutes, 6 hours, the kids are getting 2 or 3 opportunities for movement, you know, during lunch and the 2 recesses. And then the 4th is sort of organized in gym. That to me is the right school day. This, what she describes, of course, the hour, and it says 7:30. So mm-hmm. that means that an hour and 15 minutes to get, you know, 8:45, school starting at 8:45. And then if it takes an hour and 15 minutes home, it sounds like school ends around 3 or 2:45. So it sounds like the school day is solid,
right?
You know, it's 5 hours, 45 minutes or 6 hours, and hopefully has what I described, those breaks, lunch, and gym. I do think the problem here is the bus ride.
Mm-hmm.
That if the kids are tired, you know, their bodies are signaling what's going on. And if the mom is overwhelmed by this bus ride, right? Like she's noting it. She's yep. saying there's something wrong with us. It's possible it's not the school day. It's possible it's the bus ride.
And sure.
And the 3 miles, you were mentioning traffic, and I think that's really wise of you. I was also thinking about, I was thinking of the alternative. If it's traffic, then she might be in the same traffic coming back. If this hour and 15 is that it stops all the time, right?
Right.
The bus just
yep.
constantly stops.
Right. Yep.
Then she or dad or whoever, the carpool, like, you know, with us, it was carpool. We'd had 5 kids and an adult in our carpool. You get a lot of gains by driving your kids, and it's less time. Maybe it would be a half hour, and there's all these gains. You hear what your kids are saying, you know, to each other, and you mm-hmm. do a little carpool. And every once in a while, it's just the parent and the child. But I wouldn't, you know, I think it's really great to think carpool, because a lot of good listening happens yeah. and all that. I think this mom and this family should consider no more bus. You know, it sounds like this is not healthy.
Yeah.
That's my first impression. I got a lot of other stuff to say, yeah. but that's my first
good.
Impression.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I was in high school, our high school, we went to a private high school. So my bus ride was an hour, sometimes an hour and a half one way. Mm. Mm. But that was because we went to a faraway school. Right. And the way they did it the first year I was on the bus, I was picked up at a certain time. And so they had the way they went, it ended up that the last person on the bus was the first person dropped off. Those of us who were sort of picked up first were dropped off last, and it made for a very long day. But in the world that I grew up in, we didn't have the expectations of all the extracurricular stuff that kids have today, mm-hmm. where they need to be in the chess club, the drama club, football, cheer, and music lessons, and the 16 other things they're doing. And so sometimes I wonder if our school days seem long now because not that the school days are longer, but all the extracurricular stuff that's almost expected is making those days really long.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Yeah, and the whether the kids are tired or not, that's just a really great, you know, a great measurement. If to try to figure out if it's all working, right, we parents apply three categories of thinking about our kids. One is academic. Mm-hmm. How are they doing academically? Are they, if they should be getting B's, are they getting B's? You know, if they should be getting A's, are they A's, et cetera. How are they doing physically? Are they in good shape physically? Are they getting a lot of good exercise, an hour or two of exercise a day? And how are they doing social emotional? You know, do they have some friends? Are they able to relate to us as parents? Are they able to relate to other elders, you know, in their community? And if we're seeing an issue in any of those three areas in a child's life, then the child is probably too tired. The child is probably too exhausted. And it's possible that with this long a bus ride, that some of those good extracurriculars aren't even happening.
Right.
Right. Yeah. We actually would want the child to be in soccer, maybe to get the physical going, to have the physical, but the child's riding the bus for an hour and 15 minutes on the way back. So if I were a parent looking at this, I would just apply, how is my child doing physically? How's my child doing cognitively? And how's my child doing social emotional? And then if any one of those areas is awry, look for a cause. And in this family, if that's the cause, then or a cause, then perhaps then to reframe. So there'd be a reframing. It would be, well, maybe we should go to a break because it'll take me a little time to explain the reframing.
let's do that. All right, we're going to take a break. And so Michael can reframe what he was reframing. And so we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
All right, Michael, you are reframing.
And yeah.
Let me just read the response about the bus ride. So we've got all the information Facebook, and then we can talk all about it. So here's one, a mom who responded, my kid wants to ride the bus because other kids bring unhealthy foods and share. They also share their devices and watch play things I don't approve of. Plus, I was just informed yesterday how much the kids cuss on the bus. I took him off the bus last year after a behavior issue, and his grades improved as well as his behavior. Mm-hmm. Oh, there you are. Mm-hmm. The bus is not often a healthy environment. Where else do you see 50 kids and one distracted adult driving? Wow. If you can drive your kid, it would likely be in their best interest, even if they say they want to ride the bus. So affirming a little bit what you said. So go ahead, Michael, give it to us.
Yeah, yes. It's so interesting because I read the email, you know, and then I have my response and I write responses and I think about it and I cogitate and I write responses out. And then I read the Facebook, you know, I thought, oh, okay. And then and I have to say what I thought is how wise our listeners are. I mean, this is just such wise, a lot of wisdom here. So So reframing, of course, is a psych term that we psych people like to use. And what it just means is, okay, we have to change the frame. So the frame was, my child is going to ride the bus, right? And that's convenient. And then I bet some good things are happening for my child on the bus. That was our frame. But now we're looking at this and we're going to reframe it because we can see that they're like the Facebook response person, her child was having some behavior issues. That's in the social emotional area. And what did she say? And the cussing. Oh, and then the devices. Okay. Right. So probably she's thinking, I wonder if there's some cognitive. So in my framing, she's looking at the three, cognitive, social, emotional, and physical. And she's saying, okay, I need to reframe what he does, take the bus out of it, and do it a different way. And so she drives her child. I also think carpool could be a good way too. And then, and that's a reframing, and it's using these three, this sort of triumvirate, to make some judgments, even if unconsciously. And then it's also saying, well, what am I going to now value more? Like, if that child is on the bus for an hour and 15 minutes, and is going to be relating to others, so or is going to be looking at devices, is not going to be doing homework on the bus, okay, is not going to be doing chores, which are the sacred work of the family, not going to be doing playtime, outdoor play or nature time, right? So all these other things the child's not going to be doing, and also not relating to us, and not relating to others with us present to kind of listen, especially for the younger kids, you know. So now what we do is we reframe and we say, okay, now we're going to put those in the frame. We want all that to occur. So for all that to occur, the child can't do the bus.
Right.
And the gain we're going to get is all those areas. The child's going to do, you know, more chores, do homework in better time, get more outdoor time, all, you know, more social emotional development in smaller groups, less device time, which is unhealthy. That's in the frame now. And then we're going to figure out the transportation system that puts that stuff in the frame.
Right. Yeah, man, you think 2.5 hours every day sitting on a bus. Now, we both know this. There's some families, they don't have an option, right?
That's their correct. Best option. Yeah, but we're responding this one. Yeah.
Right. So if you've got the option, and you can go from 2.5 hours of travel time down to 30 minutes, wow, you've just bought yourself 2 hours of life every day.
That's the reframe.
Yep. Right. And that's 10 hours just in 1 week that you've freed up for something else. So, so it's really helpful. I love those three things. I love the three things that you're thinking about with your students. And then those things that we want to think about for a school day, whether the school day is 6 hours or 8 hours, does it have two recesses? Does it have, you know, a decent lunch break? Does it have movement, gymnasium, gym time? When my kids were at the public school, this was before COVID, they had 10 minutes to stand in line, get their food, and eat it. 10 minutes in a school that had, they were trying to serve, you know, 200-300 kids at one time. That was just crazy, right?
Yeah, it's not good. You're
right. And part of it is this pressure that teachers feel, you know, so we're not blaming teachers, but this pressure that teachers and the administrators feel, we got to cram every possible learning moment we can because we got to teach to the test, which is a whole different issue for a lot of the teachers these days and the frustration they're feeling. One more time, give us those three questions we want to ask.
Yeah. How is the child doing cognitively, which is going to be academic in terms of grades in school? How's the child doing physically? Is the child overweight or normal? Is the child, you know, basically getting a couple hours of exercise a day or not? Mm-hmm. Because if the child is getting that and is not eating too much junk food, then we should see the child, you know, being relatively healthy physically. And then social emotional. So relational, and as the Facebook person said, behavioral, that would come into that category. Physical, cognitive, and social emotional.
Okay. So we're going to take an early break because we're going to go to the whole topic of homework.
Okay.
The one thing that everybody groans over, and parents every day are fighting that battle to get that homework done. And so we could be back with Dr. Michael Green, who's going to solve that issue for you, by the way, I promise you. That's coming back in just a moment, the Wonder Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. So Michael, it's been a while. I know we've talked about homework before, but give us the Gurian impression, the Gurian thought on homework, generally speaking, and then we can tease it out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I always like to say, everyone has an opinion about how much homework kids should be assigned. I believe that my opinion, so I'll do a little self-parody. I believe that my opinion is the most science-based opinion, mm-hmm. but I know there are people out there who will say you're wrong, Gurian. But I really look at the research on homework, and I think most homework should be done in school. Mm. And I'm going to give an example, and then I'll go back to the sort of the brain science of it. But an example of a school, like, here's a high school, Crespi Carmelite High School, which is a Gurian Center for Excellence and Gurian Model School in LA, Catholic high school, boys high school. That's a high school. That's a college prep high school, right? So their students are going to places like Yale and Stanford, and right? I mean, they high success rate. Those kids do most of their homework in school. Mm-hmm. They don't take home 2, 3, 4 hours of homework, and that's high school. Okay. Yeah. So it can be done. This science-based approach, what I believe is boys and girls learn differently, science-based approach can be done very successfully. And it also makes us want to say about pre-K through eight, right? If that's a high school where most of the homework can be done in school, and these people are going to Harvard and Yale, et cetera, right? So clearly that's a good high school. They're doing a good job. Then we really want to think about how much homework second and third and fourth and fifth graders are taking home. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a reframe again. We have to realize that if that 10-year-old is doing 2 hours of homework every night, what is that 10-year-old not doing? Right. That 10-year-old is not getting exercise, not doing, you know, other social emotionals, not doing playtime, not doing outdoor, you know, you name it, not doing chores, not doing all these things that are healthy for that child. And so I just always beg people to think about this and then say, all right, what homework is essential? So homework that's essential would include reading. And I think we should take reading out of homework. It shouldn't be considered homework. Reading the novel for English class or the short story or the magazine, the nonfiction. I would like to see reading as not being considered homework. In my conversation, it's part of the reframe, because reading is an essential daily activity for all developing children, and it's great for adults. But for developing children, they should be reading an hour a day, and that should be part of their family life and not homework. So then when you take reading out and they do that, you know, on their own as part of their family life, then what homework is essential? Generally, it's going to be memorizing chemistry tables, you know, going to have some math homework, you know, a little bit of math homework. Most of it will be done in school, but, you know, could be 10, 15 minutes. One particular thing you didn't get in school. Okay. You're going to do that. So it's got to be what we call essential homework. And the teacher teams, so the school has to get together in some of their professional development and have a whole professional development on homework. We Gurian Institute folks, we do this with schools. Like, okay, we're going to all get everyone together and we're going to have a pedagogical discussion here about homework and what is essential homework, what is not, what is busy work. If you just give busy work, who's going to do it? Generally the girls. Who's going to not? Generally the boys. Is that one of the reasons that the boys are getting C's and D's? They're not handing in their homework. Yes, that is one of the reasons, right? We can disaggregate the data. And, you know, the team has to talk about this because if one teacher says, okay, I won't give homework, but the other five teachers are giving homework, we haven't dealt with the problem. So we want to have essential homework. And I think for, you know, a high schooler, maybe an hour a day, again, bracketing reading out, reading is a family activity. And then for like second, third, fourth graders, they should have little or no homework. Once you get to middle school, you know, half hour of homework, something like that. That to me is the best approach to child development.
Well, and it then provides the margins and the space kids want to have to do those other activities, chess club, drama, band, whatever it might be.
Athletics. Yep.
Right. Athletics.
Yep.
Which many of them are doing now, but they're coming home exhausted and then having to do homework until midnight, you know, and it's crazy. And as a guy in 65, I'll be 66 soon, you sort of have a little life perspective. Doesn't mean you've got all the wisdom in the world, but, you know, one of the things that we gripe a lot about in our country is we're all overworked. We just keep putting in more and more hours, but we're teaching that at school. Right? You go to class for 6 hours, then we want you to do 2 to 3 hours of extracurricular, and then we want you to do 4 hours of homework on top. We're just training our kids to overwork. And what we really should be training as a part of education is margins, boundaries, space for just breathing and enjoying life. And we kind of forget in the education system, and this isn't a negative on the teachers. They've got things that they have to teach to, but there is life to be lived. And that's a part of the education process of as kids are growing up, which is just as important as a math table and grammar.
Yeah. Right? Yes. And you're hinting at something also very, very important. If we cut back on the homework and they live life and they're, you know, all of that chemistry, all of that brain chemistry is happening in them, right? That's really, really healthy for them. And they haven't lost the learning. Right. Like, for instance, there's really no good evidence that if you give 3 hours of homework every night, that your child will do better on the tests in May, right? Mm-hmm. I know that we in education, it seems logical to think that if they do more homework, they're going to do better on the test and they're going to be smarter, right? But all that homework that they're doing, they're retaining very little of that.
Right.
Most of it is busy work. So they're just doing it. And again, it's more girls just doing it than guys. They're just doing it. And then they're given extra credits, you know, homework. So they go, oh, I'll do that too. I'll get a 5.1 average or a 4.2 average, you know, instead of a 3.9 average. But they're not really retaining. And so it's not going to have the effect that I think we want it to have on their test taking at the end of the semester or at the end of the year. So that's something I hope, you know, everyone will frame in, that parents will frame it in, teachers will frame it in, and kind of do citizen science on this. Do your own research on this. Be one of those schools that goes through this process and decides, let's try it for a semester. Let's try it. Let's all allow them to do homework in school and not give them as much homework. And then let's look at the test scores. And I think what they'll find is that there is, you know, a possibly positive effect, but certainly not a negative effect on right. the test scores.
So last question for today. Probably a lot of these parents are listening. They're nodding their heads. Yes, we agree with everything Gurian's saying.
Oh, thank God.
What do we say to our teachers? How do we begin to be a positive change when it comes to the issue of homework?
Yeah. Well, we got to help the teachers and the principals and everyone to do some professional development on this. Because of course, us criticizing, you know, isn't going to work. So right. we have to help them to get access to a day or a half day pedagogical professional development that's on homework and ask them to do that, you know, and have that facilitated by someone and do that and have a school-wide discussion in the school. No parents at this thing, because we don't want it to become parents, you know,
right.
mad at the teachers. This is just the teachers. We're just looking at it. You know, they're looking at it together. They're looking at the research. You know, because whoever comes in to help them is going to have some research to say, hey, have you looked at this research, you know, and then create action plans. Like the second half of the day is action plan. Okay, this person who's teaching social studies, how can you teach social studies and do homework differently? I bet you can. Mm-hmm. You know, let's be a team and help you. And so every teacher, so no one singled out. Math, science, et cetera. And then one of the things that comes from this is that things like science, right? Like go home and build a volcano. Okay. That we're not going to consider homework because that's so project driven. It's so tactile. It's so entertaining and fun for the kid. That's going to be like the reading that we want them to read an hour a day. Mm-hmm. So things get recategorized and then parents start going, oh yeah, okay, that's actually not homework. That's a project driven thing. And then dad or mom can get involved and the brothers can get involved and they all do it together. So that gets bracketed differently. And then we get down to, how do we help this math teacher not to give that hour of, you know, algebra, and how do we help the social studies teacher not to give a 5-page essay every week, and, you know, right. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the school tries it out. and they try it out and they kind of keep their data for a semester or a year. And they have team teaching. They have PLCs, professional learning communities, that do this, and they get together and they have Thursday morning PD, you know, which is like 45 minutes where everyone gets together and they talk about it and they go, well, how's that working? You know, do you think the kids are retaining, and what do you think of comprehension, and so on. And then that's the process that we as parents should support in the school. And then as the school makes a shift, we as parents just want to be there for them and say, right, you know, we so appreciate you're making this shift and we're going to support you. So if the homework you are giving, you know, that is essential homework, absolutely, we are going to support you in making sure our kids do that essential homework, so that parents and teachers are working together.
Excellent. And just to say again, we say it over and over again, we're big supporters of educators, especially Michael. You've spent over 30 years working with educators. So these are all things that you're committed to doing to help our educators really do the best job that they can do.
Now, and when it makes their life easier.
Yes.
It also makes their life easier. Yeah. Like, this isn't to put something extra on educators. This actually makes an educator's life easier.
Good point. Now, a little earlier, you threw me a big fat softball right over the strike zone about reading. So I'm going to take advantage of it and hit it out of the park. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about my new book for middle school readers, younger and older, The Adventures of Toby Baxter, book two, River Home for the Holidays. So we're in the holidays. It's not just a book to read in the holidays, but it's got a holiday theme. So if you're looking for a fun adventure for your kids to read or to read with them, the audiobook just came out, The Adventures of Toby Baxter. If you just go to Amazon, put the Toby Baxter book two, you'll find it. Toby Baxter book two, and you'll find it. And it would make a very merry Christmas for me if you buy that book. I'd appreciate that. And I think it will make a very merry
book.
Yes, a good holiday book for your kids. It's lots of fun. It's gotten some nice reviews. And Michael gave me a very nice review as well. And so check that out. So you have been listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, A Brain Science Approach to Parenting. We will be back with you again next time. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. And everyone get Tim's book.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, I think it's called Toby Baxter Book 2 on Amazon. Check it out. All right, everyone. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.